Welcome to The Art of Growth. I'm Joel Hubbard, and I'm here with...
Jim Zartman. I am Jim Zartman, and a lot of you know that we were formerly the Enneagram Panels podcast. Now we're doing The Art of Growth to encompass more of the holistic approach of some of the work we're trying to do. So you can check out our website at theartofgrowth.org, and you can reach us that way if you want to email me or Joel, our resident Enneagram coach and... really expert in this field now, it seems. Your name is growing in this field.
None of us who are doing this actually feel like experts.
I know, right? Well, you can't be. I think what's so profound about the process.
It's way bigger than any of us, I think, the whole Enneagram. So, yeah.
Well, because people are so much deeper and there's
absolutely
so much more.
Yeah.
Even though we have predictable patterns, the thing is we are learning so much every time we do one of these panels because of the depth and the articulation and the language and the specificity that each of these types bring to each other.
Which is why we ask more questions. We don't really want to come in there with descriptions. And you'll hear that in how we go about doing the interviews is we're asking more questions about them. So I think each one, as you said, is a unique expression of their type.
Yeah. And I joke about the whole expert thing because, I mean, it's great that more people are seeing the work that we're doing and it's expanding. But, like, these people are the experts on their type.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Well, and I think, too, what we're really discovering is there really is no stereotype. And I think that's so very important in what we're trying to do is we're trying to aim at something that is bigger than the stereotype. It's core motivations, it's patterns, but... you know, when you get into the stereotypes, that's when you really mess things up for people. People find themselves not really relating to stereotypes, not in their entirety.
And that's what creates, I think, a lot of the bad raps around the Enneagram, because there is so much stuff out there that is sort of caricatures of types instead of actually dealing with the types, which the only way to really learn about that is to delve in. I mean, the best approach in some of these conversations is asking people the questions that help them reveal the expertise they already have about themselves that is already ingrained deep in there, but they may have never articulated before.
Yeah. No, I think you'll hear that with this particular interview with the Type 5 panel because some of them say, you know, we actually feel a lot of feelings. Like, I think that sometimes it gets assumed that we don't, or that people say that, or even in some of the material that you'll read is like fives tend not to really process a whole lot of emotion or feel a whole lot of emotion, or you know, but they do. They do. And some would say they don't really tend to feel a whole lot of emotions, but others would say they do. And I think that that's wonderful that they get to express that in the interview.
Yeah, and this is wonderful. We had four type fives in this panel, and we think we had 2 5 with 4 wings and 2 5 with 6 wings.
It appears that way, yeah.
For those who are familiar with that aspect. But so the fives are located in the head triad. So talk to me a little bit about the orientation of the head triad.
Yeah, so head triad people, you know, well, as it goes with the description, they're the people that live in the head. You know, it's a lot of it is processing through that space. Even in terms of the emotions, even if a five says, yes, I do feel a whole lot of emotion, the way they're going to handle the emotion is to process it through their headspace. They're the kind of people that tend to think about research and knowledge and data and collecting enough of it so that they can engage life. This is a way that they resource themselves. So, you know, headspace people tend to need more information, you know, and it's a lot of it is anticipation of what may be demanded of them or what may come around the corner for them. So they primarily deal with anxiety, even if it's not felt acutely, it's always still functioning in the background. And so us head people, we tend to deal with a lot of that.
Right, which is very different than the body, which is the action first triad, or the heart, which is the emotions first. They do really do lead with the head. And I was joking with Abby because I thought it was hilarious that this is the only panel who asked to hear what they had done and what they had said. They wanted to hear the recording of this podcast before it went live so that they could offer edits.
Yes. Yes. This is so goes so to the core of, you know, their need for privacy. You know, type fives. Yeah.
Which is amazing that that high need for privacy that they would even agree to do something. Oh,
I was deeply, I think, honored, and I felt, you know, we needed to respect that because that takes a lot for them. What I love about this panel, too, is that it's a very mixed panel in terms of ethnicity and gender. And we really wanted to aim
and
at
age.
That particular and age, particularly for the type fives that oftentimes are viewed as white men, you know, and
analytical. You think analytical, data driven. It's like the nerdy white guy. But that is not
the software engineer.
True.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But that is the caricature again. That is not the when we deal with the motivation and dig in with people like this who it's funny. You even at the introduction, you can feel like there's some, that hesitancy, that privacy. But they are all coming from very, very different backgrounds, which is why I think that's which is something we're trying to emphasize here is because even though people come from completely different backgrounds with completely different stories, there are these core motivations that we have to kind of dig in and observe in ourselves.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and what they said, is, this has happened in every panel, is afterwards it's, you know, they're saying things like, my goodness, thank you, because this is the first time I felt like I'm completely understood in this circle. Because they didn't know each other when they walked in. These four didn't know each other at all, you know. And so when they're coming into the space, it's a discovery for them to know, oh, wow, I do have other people that think that this is really easy for me to talk with you because you understand me, even though they didn't know each other for the most part and are in very different worlds, and yet they all felt like, you get me.
And for private people to be so affirmed by strangers, to have people nodding as they're saying things that may – they probably don't get a lot of head nods in their immediate circle – and to be surrounded by people that are just going, yes, I see, I experience that. That's me too.
Yeah.
That's just so, so powerful.
Yeah.
And so we'll get to the panel here straight away. This is our panel of Enneagram Type 5s as we continue in this season, which is all about relationships and what it's like to be in relationship with them, what they need. And so let's jump in with our panel of 5s.
Welcome to the 5 panel. I'm super excited that you guys are here. I'm here with Ruth, Rashida, Claude, and Dave. And why don't we start with telling us a little bit about yourselves.
Hi, my name is Ruth. I'm 29. I work in sales. I love nature and I love animals.
Sweet.
Hi, I'm Rashida. I consider myself a forever student. I work in retail for a large company. And that's pretty much it.
Hi, Claude, father of 3, married for about 20 years. My day job, I'm a healthcare administrator, like sports, and just looking forward to the conversation.
My name's David, and I'm just started my 50th year, so I'll be turning 50 next year, so I'm kind of like in my half. Finishing up the first half of my life, and spent about 17 years in the government as a budget and finance person, and now am looking to use that expertise to help others with their financial planning.
Awesome. Well, thanks to all of you. So I'm going to give a bit of a description of the Type 5. Type 5s are described in the literature as being observers, investigators, which means that generally they seek to have enough information before they engage in the world. It's sort of a resourcing kind of experience for Type 5s. And so they tend to start off with that as their beginning point, which means they don't necessarily jump first as others would. They take more time to observe, to investigate before engaging in life. I wonder where that shows up, if that shows up, and how it shows up in your lives, if you would maybe riff off of that.
I think it shows up in every aspect of life, day to day. I mean, at work I feel comfortable because I've been working there for a while, but even just family dynamic takes me a moment to get all out there. Mm. I'm always observing.
Yeah.
fives, if I had to generalize, see a lot but don't say a lot. So I think that that's probably the best characteristic of a five. Turtles, you know, just plodding along, taking it easy, not just jumping out there.
Mm.
I guess the flip side of that is that fives, I would say, probably suffer in silence because we just, you know what, we see stuff go by and we probably won't say a whole lot.
Hmm.
I mean, I think Claude summarized that pretty well, especially like the, you know, you think about the tortoise and the hare, you know, fives don't take shortcuts. You know, there's the long, the hard, you know, not necessarily always the hard way, but it's thorough. You know, there's no, you know, cheating is not, I think, even part of our vocabulary, unless we can find a way that is a useful way that's not like cheating in the true sense of cheating. If we can find a shortcut that works, that makes things more efficient, that allows us to do things better, I think we'd be all over that. But yeah, I think the suffering in silence, I think, is a good summarization too. That kind of echoes some of the things that I was thinking about as we were prepping for this. So definitely agree with that.
Mm.
I feel like one of the reasons why fives observe first is so that we make fewer mistakes, kind of watch what other people are doing and get a little vicarious through them, see what they've done, and then we go ahead and attempt the same thing.
Hmm. You're nodding in agreement over here, yeah.
I think for me, yes, I observe. I'm still going to be me. It's not really. It's just how much of me I'm going to expose.
Measured.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Because, yes, you're going to adapt to what's going on in the room, but if it's not really for me, I'm still going to be observing.
I like, Ruth, how you described that. Just thinking that fives like to gather information. So watching others try it and say, make a mistake, it's just another way for us to say, well, you know what? We're not going to do it that way. So, again, just acknowledging that, yeah, you know, fives, a pencil and an eraser, yeah, we like to know that there's an eraser, but we don't want to use it.
Mm. Interesting.
Yeah.
It's good.
Interesting. That's really insightful. It's helpful to me to understand with that perspective or that vantage point of why. Particularly, I love this whole thing of like watching other people and seeing how they do it, and then you engage so as not to make maybe the same mistakes or to learn from them. It seems like go ahead, Ruth.
I think it's just a preference. So some people like to do things and learn as they go, and other people, I guess, like us, want to learn what we're doing and then attempt it. So we're all going to get, in the end, we're going to get good results, but it's just a different approach.
I think it's really super well said because that describes the difference between head types and heart types or body types. In the Enneagram literature, we talk about this quite a bit, that there's a distinct difference between head types who think first, heart types who feel first, and body types who move first. Those who move first will tend to do so because it's in the moving and in the motion that they learn the best. Whereas for head types, it's the observance. It's picking up on the information, the data, and then engaging in the world. And so three different approaches, but it makes a whole lot of sense of you type fives.
Just adding another piece in terms of fives, and I'll just speak for myself, I like instructions. What are the rules? Let me have the information, then I can decide, as opposed to just have at it. So What are the rules? What are the instructions? Then I can systematically walk through. Different from the other types who ready, fire, aim, as opposed to ready, aim, fire.
Yeah. So.
As fives, you know, get older and have more experience or have learned more things, they start to understand certain things that are systems so that you can apply previous things you've learned to new systems and learn them actually faster. I mean, say with software, right? The software follows a certain pattern. It's got codes. If you've figured out, you know, a couple of different systems, especially if they're in the same kind of realm, like if they're finance systems or something like that, you can relatively easily sit down to a new system and then just start clicking buttons and pretty much get the thing figured out so that the time frame for learning can become shorter too, because there's underlying systems that I think fives develop an understanding of that allows them to actually process information quicker and more efficiently down the road, but or as they get older. But
wow, Dave, as you were describing that, it reminds me of what's, I guess, in the literature around quality improvement efforts. And there's a framework that talks about plan, do, study, act, sort of like a loop. And so fives, I would generalize, we like to have a plan. We like to at least do and act on something. There is something to learn, so we study it, and then we act again. So I didn't make up the framework, but as you were describing it, it reminds me about systems that, yeah, we systematically like to go through those loops. We plan it, we do it, we learn from it, and then we act. Then we do it over, and we do it over, which is why we tend to like to just hang back, see who else has touched that hot stove for us to know, you know what, that is a hot stove. We're not going to touch it.
It reminds me also of the scientific method. You know, you have a hypothesis, you gather all your materials, and then you go ahead and do the experiment, and then you gather your results.
It also made me think of having a goal, like figuring out what the goal is, and then you can take out what's not necessary, but figure out how to get to the goal. It's easy for me to deduct, hey, this is what we need to get to. Forget the other, like there's like soft things. This is how we need to get there. Okay. This is how we should do it. I don't know how, but it just works in my head that way to remove the excitement of it.
The unnecessary parts.
Agreed. Yeah.
Yeah.
I just heard a couple of my favorite words. Scientific method, goals. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Works for me. Hypothesis, yeah, yes, works for me.
This is interesting. We're family here for you guys who are fives here. This is great. So, you know, when you think about dependency or reliance for type fives on concepts, on frameworks, on things that are head-oriented, so it gives you that ability. So when, Dave, you started out by saying that once I've learned something, a system, I'm able to then take that, and it makes it more efficient, it sounds like, for the next time. It makes it so that you can move a little bit more quickly. So there's this dependency on these things and want that reliability on something you can rely on. If you've tried it before, it works. Now you can rely on it. Now you can use it again. And there's a bit more certainty to that. Is that what I'm picking up on?
Oh, yeah. I mean, slow and steady, you know, the metaphor of the turtle. It's something that we recognize. It's something that we can rely on. You know, all the ways that I guess I would imagine that that's what fives prefer, as opposed to surprises, unexpected. At least surprises don't get me up in the morning. I need to know what's going to happen, map it out, plan it out, which, you know, good, bad, or indifferent, that's a characteristic of my preference. So
I hear that a lot from other fives, and I'd love to hear from you guys. Is predictability is an important – is that – how important is that to you guys?
I think it's important, but I kind of plan for the plan B and C, A, B, and C. And then it's not going to be a surprise for me if something else comes in the way, because I've thought about all the different options already.
Yeah, I agree. I like when things are planned out ahead of time. But I think some of the best moments in life sometimes can come when things aren't planned or when something is just spontaneous. It's kind of like you get a sense of wonder from it. But it would make me a lot less anxious, I guess, if I knew everything ahead of time. So that's much more comfortable.
I think there's kind of a difference between, you know, having your own idea of a plan, which I think for fives, because we kind of crave our space and time. So it's almost like we're kind of doing an anti-plan. We have our things that we're going to do in our daily routines or whatnot that we don't like necessarily disturb. But if somebody else comes in, like I grew up, my dad is a planner. You know, he's always like, you know, first up in the morning, you know, raring to go. He's got the full itinerary going. You know, anytime we'd go out, he'd be always pushing to go. I'd be like, Dad, relax, you know, like, you know, let's just go see, we're going for a walk. It's not about necessarily getting from point A to point B in the woods. You know, I kind of want to look around a little bit and spend some time. But as far as planning, there is still that kind of thing where other people's plans can really crowd us, I think. And I've worked with a couple of entrepreneurs type people who are constantly – changing from like 1 minute to the next, and that can get me backing up into a corner kind of a thing, because it's like I don't have the time or the space to kind of do the thing that I sort of had come into the day planning to do, and now we're, you know, jumping around from here to here, and that's my experience with plants at least.
Mm. Ruth mentioned preference, and I would say that for fives, it's not that we can't pivot. It's just that we prefer to know that we have a plan A, a plan B, and a plan C. That's it. We just like to plan. So at the end of the day, it's just minimizing how many unknowns or injects. It's not to say that we can't adjust. It just means that we have a preference, and it tends to take more energy to adjust. That's all. Mm. So, and as we get older, we get a little bit better at figuring out, well, how do we lean into whatever plan B or plan C is, recognizing the amount of energy it takes to get there. Mm. So if we lay it out, we have the contingencies, and then we navigate.
Mm. Yeah. Super well said.
Yes.
With that, let's pivot to talk about relationships. What do you bring to your relationships as a five? What do you think some of your, you know, contributions to those you're in connection with? What would that be?
Personally, I believe that it brings strong boundaries. I have a respect for other people's time and their space and their energy. I don't want to impose on other people. I'm really good with keeping secrets. I wouldn't go and share somebody's secrets with somebody else. And definitely somebody who hates gossip.
Mm. I think I bring an optimistic outlook, very observant. So even if a person is not saying something, I can kind of feel it, and maybe I'll bring that up later or wait for that to come out later. Really good at research. I don't know. That always seems to be a good with relationship, with planning, and I don't know whether it's traveling or family planning or whatever it is. People are always calling me about things. What do you think of this? Could we do this? And does this make sense? And that's pretty much it.
Good question. I guess in general, just thinking about being reliable, being steady. This is a sort of like heart fuzzy feel good question. And for me, I don't consider myself to be a heart fuzzy feel good kind of person. So I'm just trying to figure out in the question, okay, so what do I bring to a relationship? So is that the existential question? What do I bring to a relationship? Or is it, hey, Claude, what do you bring to a relationship? So I guess I would just say that, you know, for me, you know, going on 20 years being married, my wife and I have this conversation from time to time. And so I'm learning to become better at sharing. And I guess that would be the journey, that I tend not to share. But you know, what you see is what you get.
Yeah, there's nothing behind that. There's no like hidden agenda or hidden motivations that you're not expressing.
Yeah, and but there's a logic to it. Again, I can only share with you my story. So from the time that I met my wife to the time that we decided to take this lifelong journey together, I mean, that was years in the making. But there was a logic, not just emotionally. Yes, I was smitten. But I had already, quote unquote, done the math. Like, all right, this is the person with whom I want to spend the rest of my life with. And there was no moving off of that.
You fives are the only ones that I would ever imagine saying, I did the math when it comes to romance.
It's good. It's our language.
So fantastic.
There's a logic to it. It's got to make sense. So when you ask, what do you bring to a relationship? There's consistency, reliability, it's however it is that one sees, if that's what you want. If that's not what you want, well, move to a different number.
So far, the math for me has worked in the opposite direction. It's pretty much left me single for 50 years. So, but as far as what I bring to relationship, I think, you know, there's definitely – I share some of the things that others have said here. You know, I hadn't even thought of boundaries because boundaries are so so much a part of who I am that I sometimes forget that I'm actually do bring that. Mm. What I had kind of thought about coming in was that for in relationships that I have, I basically bring everything I know. So everything I've learned, I bring to relationships. I mean, and I'm more than happy to share everything. And sometimes that can be overwhelming for the other person in the relationship. But then the overwhelming part can be the not the knowledge that's overwhelming, but the like nonstop spewing out of the knowledge of everything I know and don't know, because it can, if it's not stopped at some point, it can just like go, and that can overwhelm some people. But like Claude was saying, I think I also, in that sharing information that I've learned, it's not, I'm not really sharing much about me or who I am or anything that's going, like any emotional stuff that's going on. I also would say that there's no ulterior motive in that. It just doesn't really occur to me that that's important to share versus the other information that I have, which, you know, is much more valuable, I guess I would say, for sharing. So
it's so funny. When you were saying that, immediately I had this flashback as you and I were working on a website or something, and I was just like kind of going through like, all right, let's get to the bottom of this. And you were like reading all of the instructions. And at one point I said to myself, oh God, is he going to read the entire thing? Because I've never read a document or of instructions in my life.
And I skimmed them at this point.
I was like, oh no.
This could be a while.
And it was. It was like a 45. It took like 45 minutes to read this document.
Oh my goodness. Too funny. Yeah, Claude.
Just picking up on favorite words today, Ruth used the word boundaries, and that's spot on. The flip side of that, it's the behavior. So what I do bring is that there are boundaries. The challenge is that because it tends to be in a box, part of what I'm still working on is how do I share outside of that box? It's got to be okay to let my hair down. So that's just processing. So when I heard the word boundary, I was thinking about for myself, well, what does that mean in terms of what behavior, quote unquote, that I bring to the relationship? So
how do you see boundaries as a gift to your relationships?
Because I have boundaries for myself, or I don't want certain people to cross, I'm okay with giving other people boundaries and see that, hey, maybe that question or what that action was too fast, or I'll give them time to. I'm understanding about the boundaries because I have my own.
It's a fantastic question. I guess what I'm stuck on the gift part, because I'm learning to recognize for myself that too many rules can become a challenge, a put off. And so there's got to be a better balance. So yes, there are boundaries, but then there's got to be a way to navigate within those boundaries. So, and that for me happens over time. So sometimes people confuse and think, wow, you're such an extrovert. And I think, well, no. Why? Just because I was in a meeting and we were talking and I was processing information. But you could probably walk away from that table and ask, well, did Claude share about himself? And odds are, no, because it's not the space that I feel most comfortable in. I will interact, but at the end of the day, there's a purpose to the interaction.
This goes to the privacy component to type 5s, if I'm understanding what you're saying, is that this is what speaks to a part of what it says about privacy. I mean, there's a whole lot to the privacy issue for 5s, but part of it is you're not comfortable in a setting like that to express, you know, what's going on within you. So to open up, it seems safer to ask questions about other people. The boundary piece, I think that Jim asked, is a really, really good question. And I think that you guys are, you know, trying to answer that. Dave, I'd love to hear from you as to what do you see as a gift in the fact that you do have boundaries?
When I was thinking about it, as the others were answering and saying their experiences with boundaries, it occurred for me, it's having boundaries, or, you know, the ability to create boundaries or develop boundaries as just a part of who we are or who I am, has allowed for people to trust me very easily, very quickly. You know, they're willing to share things with me. I'm like, why did you just share that all with me? I mean, like really personal, like deep stuff. And I'm like, a lot of, I think, is because the boundaries, they people see us as boundaried people or see me as a boundaried person, which means they can share something with me and that's not going to go anywhere. Because I don't share a lot about my own stuff or other people with them, you know, I think Ruth mentioned something about gossip earlier, is, you know, that's just not in our character at all. That's part of the boundary, I think, one of the, just a particular boundary that probably we all have in common. So the boundary part as a gift is, I think, allows or facilitates our ability to listen well or for people to share their stories with us. And in my case, with me personally, I find it happens quite a bit. On the downside of boundaries, I think at one point I was congratulating myself for being a boundaried person and doing boundaries really well. And then I started delving into the Enneagram a little bit and the 5 component and going like, oh, that's like our natural defense thing. So like Claude, it's like, I have to be careful here because I can like over boundary the thing. And, you know, I think boundaries are kind of synonymous with compartmentalization, and which is another thing I do really well, almost effortlessly. And there's parts of me that, you know, I would challenge most of my friends to actually be able to know all of, like, everything about me. There's still stuff that comes up in conversation, like they look at me and go like, when did that happen? Or like, what, you know, that kind of thing. Like, you did what? And that does happen, yeah.
You're all of you are like, yeah. I want to hear about this.
Well, I mean, it's the vocabulary. So even as we're having this conversation about boundaries, you know, Ruth, you talked about the gossip piece, and that resonant because we are a trusted source. I'm not going to put your business out on the street. It's shocking at times for me how much folks will confide just out of the blue. Mm-hmm. And it's because whether they recognize that, okay, once it's with me, it's with me. And I've learned not to take that for granted. So I would say to the question about a gift, if that's what one's looking for, that I'm a resource where I will help you process if that's what you're asking for, and I'll make sure to keep your information private because that's what you expect. So it is that trust factor. Is that boundary? Is that an ethical framework? Is that a private? Whatever it is, it just means that it's a preference. And until I heard the question now, I didn't really recognize it as a gift. But as we're talking, I'm realizing, well, there's value there, at least for me. And I'm appreciating and reflecting to the number of conversations that I've had over time, family members, friends, colleagues. And I realize, wow, that's a role that I have in whatever relationship that I have or rapport that I have with the person on the other side. So I'm acknowledging that just in this context here.
Yeah.
I agree. 100% agree with that. I find that people, whether it be coworkers, friends, will say certain things and they're like, they don't even have to say, oh, don't tell anybody because they know it's not going anywhere. I don't know. It's not my story to tell. Just the same way I wouldn't want if I say something that I have to push myself to say it or let it out, I wouldn't want that to go anywhere. So I would give them the same respect.
Mm. Yeah.
I want to add that I feel that I have really strong sensitivity to other people's idea of their self-concept. I want to create environments where people can be authentic with me, and I don't want to lose that trust. So the strong boundaries is a defense mechanism, really, for both of us, for myself and for others.
Mm. I want to add something to that. I've got a couple things. It's crazy. My mind's going nuts now because you guys are bringing up all kinds of really fascinating things I hadn't really given much thought to before. As much as I've read about the 5, it's still just wonderful hearing from you. So much more to it. So the other component to boundaries that I think you bring, and maybe I don't know if you notice this, but people feel safe in addition to the fact that you're going to keep it secret, you're going to keep it private, you're not going to tell other people what they've shared with you. But the other fact is, I don't know if it's a fact, but it's my experience of 5s, is that when I share something, I don't feel like you're going to dig. You're very respectful of when someone shares something, to honor that, but to delicately move with it, as opposed to like some people would turn on and say, oh, really? Oh, tell me more. And it becomes like an overwhelming experience that people have. And I think that you bring that measure of safety and that you respect people's boundaries and that what you've told me I receive as, you know, as a gift. But I'm not going to go digging for more.
Thanks. I would say that that's not an absolute, that last part about not digging more. And I'll just speak for myself. One of the things that I've had to work on is to resist the temptation to try to gather more data. So listen more, speak less. So I would just say that as a natural impulse, because I do value the data, the information, just to make sure that I've got the facts. Joe Friday, right? Just the facts. So I just say that in the interaction, I've learned, especially at home, to try to make sure I'm not injecting, oh, this is another problem. Okay, let's solve the problem. Mm. No. Okay, let's just listen. Let's just listen. Don't say anything else. Just listen. I say that because, yes, on the road to listening and understanding, there is that temptation from time to time to try to gather more information, but it's important to at least recognize in the conversation, is it appropriate or not? And that comes over time, and I'm still working on that.
Because I feel that at times I will ask the person, well, why? Why comes up so I can gather more facts? And I ultimately go in that troubleshooting, solving problem if it's an issue. And I have to hold back it, like you said. Some people just want to vent and they don't really want the solution. So a lot of times I already have a solution or thinking of how to fix this. I have to hold back to not say, hey, well, why don't you do this? Because their story is not done.
Right. I appreciate that. Thank you. That's really good feedback. The other question I wanted to ask, which isn't on the list, so feel free to pass this. I don't think this will be too much trouble for you guys to answer. But I've heard from other fives that there's an adaptability component to your fiveness, where you can adapt to different situations and try on different personas, as it were, given the task or the role that's at hand. And in relationships, I wonder how that comes up. Has that been something you've noticed or seen in yourself?
In the question, the word adaptive. So I would consider myself to be an adaptive leader because the framework calls for being able to see the big picture, being able to manage whatever stress or distress. And so just in those two domains, I would say yes, day to day, part of the execution of the plan is to have the contingency to be able to adjust and to help others adjust, to help myself adjust. And so, yeah, the operative word is adapting in whatever context. I would say, yeah, that probably resonates with how I like to operate. Mm-hmm. And folks recognize that. The ability to pivot, again, depending on the scale and the acuity, and there are all other factors, but at the end of the day, the ability to adjust to whatever change is happening. Yeah, I would say that that's a preference, a characteristic, a strength.
Mm. I would say it's almost like acting for me. If I can put myself into a character and understand a particular type of character that I might need to put on for a particular situation. You know, in when I was in the government, in big conferences, I was an agency expert in our systems, and we would have sort of discussions about how to best do something. And, you know, there would be times where the direction seemed to be going in, like, not a good direction, or at least not the direction that, you know, the group I was part of. But so me, who would normally sit in the back and be fairly quiet, was actually one of the more outspoken people. So I'd have to kind of put on this person, you know, and become more outgoing, more sort of aggressive, probably going into my, I guess in Enneagram language, would be kind of stepping into the eight side of things, which is kind of acting in a way, because it's not necessarily who I am, but I'll step into that and do it when I have to. The other interesting thing is when I was working there, because I was a team leader, I was constantly trying to figure out how to motivate my team and doing it in the best way. And so I was kind of trying to shape-shift myself into different leadership styles and trying to figure out which one might work. And sometimes it was very awkward results, and sometimes it was more natural. But I think there is an adaptability for – in some cases it's a survival mechanism. In other instances, we have – I think at least from what I understand about myself is there's an ability to kind of like – I can still be back here in my head safe, and I can put out a front there that I basically – you know, whatever happens out there, is I don't have to worry about. I'm still me back here. And I can present that side or that other different character out there when I have to. But
I've heard people say – I've heard some five say they can almost observe themselves. It's like they're watching themselves do something, be something. Huh. Interesting.
I think sometimes we can see ourselves in third person. So personally, I would be happy if I could spend the whole day in complete silence. But as you know, the world's not like that. So I think personally I can put on the social pose. And if somebody around me really needs someone to talk to, they need to have a conversation, even if it's small talk, I can put on that role for them. And I don't feel like I'm being not true to myself when I do that.
Takes a lot of energy, though.
It does take a lot of energy, but I think people are worth it.
Yeah.
I feel like the small talk is a learned skill for me, just with experience with work and things. I don't know. I think it's a good thing that I have adapted that, because I wasn't always like that. I was kind of very quiet. I wouldn't say shy, but quiet, which doesn't always work. Back to what you were saying about bringing on the age piece, I think, for instance, just thinking back to a meeting at work the other day, and people were talking. I'm writing down notes because I'm thinking about, hey, what's our overall goal? And taking the little pieces and asking questions based off of trying to get to that goal and taking the key pieces of how to get there. And saying it in a forceful way that I wouldn't normally say it, because I'm trying to gear us to getting to the goal.
It's a great question as an inject in terms of the ability to adjust or adapt. And I was just thinking about the last couple of comments that I prefer quiet space. I prefer, a library to, other settings, just because I like the quiet. I like quiet music. And so I say that because, it doesn't mean that I can't interact socially. It just means that I have a preference. And yes, being on stage does take energy. And so as long as I can manage how much energy that takes, sometimes it shocks people that, oh, wait, well, you made that look easy. Well, no, I had to prepare for that, and I have to recover from that. So as long as those two are part of the plan, then sure,
you can do it.
Perform. But it's just, it's not an inability. It just means that I have to calculate, well, how much energy is that going to take?
Yeah. What do you need? You guys are not needy types. That's one of the things I've learned about fives. You can go for a long time without getting anything from almost anyone. You're very self-reliant. But this is a tough question. What do you need from your relationships?
Yeah, there is a weird dichotomy. It's at one point, really I want to be able to maintain myself and to not rely on anyone. And then on the flip side, I do want to cultivate really strong, deep relationships in my life. So I gravitate towards people who want to have deeper conversations and who do want to share those secrets and do want to share the emotional stuff. And I think in a close relationship, I definitely need that. But on like a surface level relationship, I really don't need much of anything at all, to be honest.
Head nodding again.
Well, the concept of small talk is an oxymoron. I just don't understand that. Mm-hmm. Why small talk? What's the purpose of it? I mean, just things in general. But at the end of the day, it's all about the deep dives, the deeper connections, so that there's a better, at least for me, I like to feel that I am better connected. The challenge is expressing that. So I love to be in listening mode because it's more data to process. But on the, I mean, literally, it's just like, oh, I didn't know that fact. Oh, I didn't know that about you. I didn't – like I – for me, I get excited about learning about other aspects of people. The flip side of that is that I feel very uncomfortable sharing other aspects of myself. So how that plays out, yeah, I could sit in a room in peace and quiet all day. I could sit at my desk all day. What about the interactions? Well, yeah, that's secondary. I mean, I can do it, but my preference is to be in quiet space. So the need question, I don't know, peace and quiet.
Leave me alone. That's what I need.
I think for me, I do need some social aspect, but I do have to have the time of quiet. Like if I have a busy week and busy weekend, I will go into the next week a little drained. I have to put some time to say, hey, just chill. But on the other side, if I am quiet and alone for too long, I don't know. It's just not for me. I need a little bit of something. Interaction with people, whether it just even just going for a walk or something. I think for what I need from a relationship, it's I would say patience to open up about things. It takes me time to get comfortable and build that trust to say, okay, I'm willing to say my inner things that others will just say to me. They're like, well, I express this. And I'm like, well, I don't have anything to express. you get what I mean? It's like,
if so I'm not... You're saying you need... I'm trying... I definitely want to hear more about that. So you need space. You need somebody to give you the space. But does it help to have someone draw you out?
At times. Yeah. But most of the time I kind of clam up. I think it just takes time and patience and build trust building.
Part of the challenge with having an experience and not forgetting is that there may be scar tissue there. So when you ask about, well, what do I need? Well, personally, I'd like to avoid situations where I have to learn a hard lesson again. And sometimes it ends up putting off folks because, yeah, I hesitate. Well, because I may have a frame of reference that I can't articulate, but it's there. And so it's not a bad thing, but it can be bad because it takes time to at least share and interact and let folks know exactly what's happening with me. So it's a good question. It's just hard to, you know, well, do I need a hug today? Well, yeah, I mean, it could just be that I need a hug. Do I want to have long conversations? Well, I like to have not just surface conversation or small talk as much as it is where I really tell me, what is it that you – how you doing? How you feeling? What's going on? As opposed to just, well, you know, I went to the mall. I mean, so it's just the way that I interact and what I prefer as opposed to the ways that sometimes I have conversations with folks, but I realize that I can't avoid the scar tissue that could be there. I may have had a bad interaction, I may have had a bad experience, but I just don't know how to put it out there. But it's there. So,
for me, the what I need from relationships is similar to what everybody else has said is I need space to think. And I think patience is a good word too because it takes a while. I think you know for me to let people in or to get to a level of relationship where the deeper stuff starts happening. It starts you know slow. And I think I wrote I need it's kind of disengaged time, so I can actually be with somebody, but it's not in have that energy, but not in an engaged like time. So it'd be like sitting together reading, or going for a walk in the woods, or just a walk anywhere, that kind of thing. Just in silence. That can be a huge thing in a weird way for me in terms of building relationship. If you can spend time with me and not have to, you know, chew my ear off or, you know, or and can actually stand, you know, some silence around me, that goes a long way to kind of deepening the relationship, because I know I can spend time with you and I don't have to, you know, raise my defense or burn energy. I don't have to, like, think about that. I can I also need to be drawn out from time to time. So I need one of the things from my relationships is I've always needed friends who would kind of like my roommate when I was in law school, you know, would basically get home. I would just get home and he'd get home and I'd be like fried from working all day and then going to school at night. And he'd pop in and go like, hey, let's go grab a beer, you know. And so we'd go down to the thing. It was just kind of a cool it was a way to sort of decompress from all that day, spend some time. You know, we just would go down and, you know, have a beer and you know, not really talk about too much, but just it would just be out doing things. And so that was – it was great because he would actually – do that and kind of like draw me out. And I can imagine that I would have spent way more time just sitting by myself at home. That pretty much sums up, I think, what I think I need in a relationship. But I think also you need people to draw out and sit there and be willing to ask you about yourself and then give you the time to actually like respond, because we don't necessarily, or I don't always have a response ready about myself. I mean, I'm perfectly willing to share, you know, you ask me about particular things, I'm more than happy. I have no qualms about sharing just about anything, but, you know, some questions are throw you off, like, oh, I've never really thought about that. That's going to take a little while to kind of think about and think back to. Experiences in my life. And I think to what Claude was saying is some of those scars too, you know, we have them, we've built up boundaries based on certain experiences we may have had with relationships. But at the same time, we probably, because that was so long ago and the boundary worked so well, we probably don't know where that boundary started. Mm-hmm. And so that takes a little bit of going back to going like that, to figuring out what it was. And then you have to be, you know, if you're going to share that, the fear, I think, for me is that you share something like that and somebody looks at you and goes like, well, that's silly. You know, why did you do that? And I'm like, well, it's me, you know. You know, it's not silly. That's just the way it – when I went back and looked at it, that's what I figured out happened, and that's why I did it. And in a way, yes, it's probably silly from another's viewpoint, but from my viewpoint, it's, you know, it was at the time, it was, you know, a big or a significant enough event that it, you know, caused me to behave a certain way for the next segment of my life. But so.
Dave, you just said something that reminded me to the question about what I need. I guess two things come to mind. Need time and space to reflect. So I'm unapologetic about that. And I know that it takes energy to interact with folks, and I just need time to regroup and renew. So as long as that's allowed, then I feel okay. The other is I feel comfortable even in relationships having a routine. You know, the kids and I, we have our routine, you know, whether it's school drop off, you know, in the morning, or knowing that there's movie night, knowing that we're going to go on vacation, whatever that is. I may or may not make it to dinner, but I know that at the end of the week, I'm going to make it to the soccer game. So between having time and space to reflect, but also knowing that there's a cadence, that there's a routine, and whether it's at home or at work, there are certain folks that I interact with at certain times every day, just because that's part of the routine. And so they know what to expect me, and I know what to expect from them. And that's just the rules of how we interact. So I guess in a long-winded way, what I need is to know that I have time to regroup, because being in conversations at times can be it just takes energy. So I just need time to just refuel. But the routine piece, there's no substitute for it, as long as I know that there's...
This is really helpful to families out there who are listening to this saying, and even employees, I think, employees, thinking like, I want to get to know this individual, but I'm not sure how. I have a child who's a who I think is a five. I have a parent who I think is a – and I'm not sure how to engage in that relationship. What you guys are saying is really helpful, but I'd love to hear, like, what would you say to those people? Like, what, you know, you're the five. You can be in that position and imagine what that would be like. How would you – what would you coach them? What would you say? The space is a big thing. Questions?
I can answer that. So I think in a relationship, kindness goes a long way. I think that fives, or myself in particular, can take a long time to open up. So I really need somebody who's going to have the patience and also like the grace to deal with me. And they're going to just need to, you know, if I do something, if I make a mistake, that's something I'm really sensitive about. So I need someone that's not going to be overly critical. I feel like I'm self-critical enough. And just to get me to open up, I think you just have to take it slow. Like, we'll just start off, maybe silence even, pick it up a little. You can ask some deeper questions. Especially if you ask something that I'm interested in, I'll probably talk about it a lot more and you can go from there.
I love what you're saying, because I think what you're describing is sort of the way the five works, the sort of the framework of the five. Like, start off with patience or silence, yeah, with you know, a calmer approach to me, and then secondly, let's talk about something that warms me up, something that's a in my interest space, something that you're asking me to that I can discuss without having to go in and in, you know, into the internal world immediately. You know, just as soon as you ask, I have to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if you don't know what the person's interested in and they're a five, I would ask something in the environment, like something that maybe you're at a place together. Maybe you're both in, let's just give an example. Let's just say that you're at, a museum. You can just say like, oh, like, look at what's over here. Do you like this? What do you think of this? And then that can kind of build up a conversation instead of just being like, oh, what's on your mind? Because that could be anything.
That's too broad of a question. Yeah.
Yeah. I like what Dave said about just spending time. Sometimes it's being in a room with another person, even if it's quiet. To mm-hmm. me, I enjoy that a lot, mm-hmm. you know. And also having the patience to, if someone is asking me a question, personal question, give me time to actually think about it. It's what you said, it was perfect, because sometimes I don't know the answer or I haven't dealt with it yet. It's kind of like compartmentalized it. I do need that question to be asked, though, because otherwise I sometimes will never deal with it.
Okay, let me press further. Let's say it's an employee or an employer. This is, you know, I want to talk to you about mm-hmm. something. Mm-hmm. Is it more helpful for you to have a sense of what that's going to be about and then the date is set up later, as opposed to just sort of storming in and saying, tell me what you think about this?
Yes. Even just a couple hours or a half an hour to say, hey, so I can do my research or whatever it is to be prepared for that meeting or discussion. But it depends on what they're asking, because if it's something I'm comfortable with or I have a lot of knowledge, it may just answer
it comes right off. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If it's something like, oh, can you do some research on this, or what are your thoughts on this, and I don't know the answer, I need some time to look it up.
Yeah.
When I get home each day, Nicole asks me a question that is my favorite question, which is, how was your day? And embedded in that question is a point for me to reflect. Oh, you know what? Since you've asked, okay, let me think in short form. Here are the three things that happened today. And that's important for me, just in the way that we interact, just hearing that question. The kids, they have a different way of asking that same question, like, how did it go today? Did you have fun today? You know, that kind of stuff. But again, it's a point of reflection. So I guess advice, and it's something that Ruth said, the time piece. There's no substitute for allowing that time. So as long as one can be patient with the way that we are, then it bodes well. Mm-hmm. So just acknowledging the time piece, because that resonates with me. But the question at the end of each day, just to pause, it's probably the best experience just to be able to reflect, try not to vent because, you know, you have good and bad days. But at the end of the day, it's just to pause and say, all right, let me play back. And for someone like me, it helps me to then sort of look back at the day and say, okay, so what worked well, what didn't? It's another sort of way to approach the next day to make sure that it's a better day.
Hmm. Claude mentioned a routine earlier. And so I would say that that's a very important thing. At least I found it to be very important in relationships. I have a very good friend who we met, you know, jeepers, back in the mid-90s. He was working at a record store, and I was a frequenter of that record store as sort of an escape from work, you know, a couple times a week. And we would start – we would just talk about music. He would suggest some stuff. I would be like, oh, all right, well, I'll check it out. And, you know, found out he was in a band, and then he moved – you know, he moved up to Salem, and I was in Beverly. And so we got to spend some time on the train occasionally going in and out of Boston. So it was a long-term relationship. And then probably about you know, maybe – trying to think. Yeah, oh, probably almost 15 years later or so, you know, he has his first kid, asked me to be, you know, the godfather of his son. And – but over this time, like we would get together, and he was in a band and all this other stuff, and we would see each other at the studio or at shows or occasionally here and there. But it was a couple times a year maybe, and it was, you know, once his kid was born and he's kind of more settled. He was settled in up in Lowell, and I came up one. You know, we arranged to kind of get together because we hadn't done anything for maybe like 6 months or something like that. And so I came up on a particular Sunday and that we had sort of planned to do. And then we're sitting there and he turns to me, goes like, dude, you know, we're pretty much here every Sunday, like just plan to come up every Sunday and we'll just, you know, we'll hang out, we'll do some stuff in the yard or the house or whatever. And so that became that. And that was like, I don't know, 6 years ago or so now. And every Sunday since then, I go up there, we, you know, hang out, we talk, you know, I've gotten to know his wife really, really well as well. And I've gotten to know these great they have two kids now and, you know, they're seven and six, I think, if I remember right. And they're a handful, but they're awesome as well, you know, and it's actually been really good for me. So but that's a routine. Like I know that that's going to happen every Sunday. There's other people that have said, well, we have an open house. Come by any time, you know, show up any time. You're more than welcome. That doesn't work. That's not a routine. I will never show up at somebody's house uninvited. You know, it just doesn't make sense to me. I'm not one of those people. So I would say routine is important for a relationship, at least for me. It's something I can – figure out my energy needs around that so that I have the energy I need to for that relationship because I know I'm going to need it for that particular time or that day so I can conserve or whatever, regroup on different times so that I'm kind of ready for that. On the other – another point, it was to this what I need from relationships question but also in sort of the work – environment is in what we were I think one of you was talking about in terms of I think you were responding to Joel's question if somebody comes in you know to your office and like you know you don't have time to prepare. Well, when I was in my former job, people would just storm in to my like come flying into my office and just start. I mean, sometimes it would be screaming. Sometimes it would just be, you know, they would just start rambling on about some problem that they'd come across or something like that. And, you know, sometimes for me that the issue wasn't that they were coming to me with a problem. It's that they didn't have respect for what I might have been doing at that time because I was in the middle of something maybe very – that I was deeply concentrating or heavily concentrated on trying to figure out a problem, maybe trying to write an email for my boss. And all of a sudden they're in there now, and I have no choice. They've hijacked my brain because they're present there, and you know, I have to shift. But then I kind of lose my focus of where I was. So it's a very jolting thing for me to have that kind of thing happen. So being cognizant of what I might be working on at a particular time, and you know, they can come and say, "Hey, can I come and see you in half an hour, or can I come and see you in 10 minutes or something?" It gives me at least time to close out from where I am, and sort of gear up for, okay, now I'm ready for that. Otherwise, it's a very hard shift. Mm.
That's so helpful, Dave. I really appreciate what you're saying. That is really hugely helpful for all of us as we're listening. Is like this is what it feels like when someone walks in and interrupts, you know, a five. It's not as easy for you guys to just sort of pivot shift and just go, sure, okay, you need my energy, you need my attention, sure, and then go right back.
Dave, that last comment, just acknowledging that I've gotten to share and express more, to say, can I have a minute? Mm-hmm. Or can I have, like, putting that out there, you know, has made it easier for me then to be authentic in that interaction, because if I just say, well, come on in, and I'm not ready, then it's hard to pretend. So, but I've learned over the years just to take the time to say, you know what, come back in 10 minutes or I'll be with you in a minute. So that's, again, it may not be the best that the other person experiences, but I've learned for myself, and maybe it's just the protective nature of being who I am, that I've had to put that out there. Because nothing good comes of just, oh, yeah, sure, have a seat, but then you're not in the conversation because you're not ready.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. I've had to build that, I would call it a boundary, or that, hey, are you ready? Are you available to answer this question or whatever it is? Because I find at times I get a lot of questions, but I'm thinking about something, and my reaction at times may not be what I want it to be. So it's like, oh, can you give me a minute, like you said? That has been working pretty well, because then I can finish that email or finish a calculation, whatever it is that I was doing, because going back to it, it's like, okay, what was my thought? Mm-hmm. I lost it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Claude, I like what you were saying about authenticity. Do the other fives, do you all agree with that too, that you want to be authentic with people? Because I think truth is something that's important to us. So we don't want to come off as fake to others. We don't want to say something that we don't mean.
Sure. Spot on. Because we value what we're tying our name to. Because, again, we're a trusted source. And so, you know, for me, just need that time to get into that frame and not pretend that I'm ready to pivot when I'm not. So I guess over the years I've learned to just take that time to just say, you know what, I just need a couple minutes. And I've had to be okay with putting that out there, because then – I can be in the moment and I can be genuine, and whatever it is that you want to process, you want to share, we can do that. But it's just that time piece.
Mm-hmm. I agree 100% with both Ruth and Claude.
I like that trusted resource. Like that's something that fives are for a lot of us. Like, you know, you want to go, you want to get good information, reliable information. Well, you know, go talk to a five, you know. Yeah. This is another interesting question. What do others find confusing about you? Smiles?
Everything.
Everything.
I think others may find us cold, or I don't know, myself particularly, but I don't know. Maybe sometimes I am, but it's not really intentional or something I want to be. Sometimes it's hard to connect, to really put myself out there and to open up that way. And sometimes even I feel like, especially as like a female five, that maybe I'm not giving enough to people, or that I'm not being enough for them. And that's something that I don't really like, that image.
Thanks for bringing that up. That's a very, very important issue. So you're not coming across as warm. You're not coming across
as... Yeah, not really like a warm,
empathetic.
Nurturing.
nurturing.
Someone who's running over with Band-Aids when you get a cut.
we're more like, oh, come on.
Get over it. Suck it up. Walk it off.
Now, it is an area of struggle only because obviously we're not machines. There are human interactions. And so I would say that I can come across as being unapproachable because I'm pensive. And sometimes being quiet gets sort of confused or is misconstrued as angry. So that's where I've struggled with that because, you know, I interact with folks, whether it's family members or colleagues or employees. And I would say that that's probably the biggest challenge is that I'm misunderstood only because I am quiet. And so folks can't read my mind. And I don't express well, so that's
tend to have a good poker face, and that goes to that whole thing of like you're in your head, so the expressions aren't coming through. Mm. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah,
I can be thought as maybe cold at times. No, I don't know. I don't see myself as cold, but I do have inner deep thoughts and emotions, but I just don't express them. So I think. At times people are confused by that to say, oh, well, you are so strong or whatever it is. But, yeah, I'm still dealing with all this stuff. Mm. And they may not ask those questions to check in or whatever it is that I would do because at times maybe I've pushed them off because I'm not ready to deal with that yet. Mm. So it goes back to the time and patience of waiting for me to be ready to express whatever it is.
Mm. I would just add that sometimes because I'm quiet, people assume that I'd rather just have the email instead of the conversation. And I'd rather have the conversation and not just the email or the text message. So it's just the way that we process information, or at least I do. And so that's where I think it's most confusing for folks because I do like information and facts. People just assume, well, then I'll just send you the facts. It's like, well, no, I want to have a conversation, a deeper conversation. And so that's where I would say that I'm most, I can be misunderstood because people assume, well, no, I gave you the paper, I sent you the information, that's all you want to process. But no, I'd actually like to have the interaction. It's all about the deep dive and not just the surface, the small talk.
Found that people, especially at work, have said, oh, well, you're quiet, period. I'm like, oh, no, there's more to me than that. But they just haven't had enough time to get to know me that I'm not always quiet. I do have opinions. People are like, oh, wow, I thought you were this. And they, like, trying to analyze or figure out who I am. And it just takes time for that to happen.
There's a lot of emotions that we don't express. Myself particularly, probably leaning into because I have the four wing. I do have a lot of emotional stuff going on underneath, but I don't always process it in the moment, so I don't always talk about it in the moment. And so it doesn't always get out there. So some people don't see it. They don't see it as you're an emotional person, even though I consider myself to be.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things I was thinking. It seems to be a common thread as an answer to that question is that people just don't understand that I actually do have emotions. They just don't necessarily come out. I think people also don't understand or find confusing that, like, why don't you want to go out to the show or to this party or just out? And I just don't. Like, I just rather stay at home. You know, it's that gets confusing for especially my more extroverted friends. And it's there's really no way to – you try to explain it to them based on, like, this is what I've understood about myself. It's just me. I just don't – I'm not a big people person. I just don't enjoy that. And they look at you like what's wrong with you? And I just learned to, like, well, it's just who I am. Just don't worry about it. But I think the other thing too that people that can confuse people is I think there's at least for me is time is kind of this bendable thing. Time in between encounters doesn't, in my mind, doesn't weaken a relationship. It basically you can start or continue that relationship, you know, a year apart or, you know, or with time, which can be very confusing if you're trying to date somebody and you're like, you know, 4 weeks later you haven't called them back or something like that. That's a whole different confusion. But it's like it doesn't, you know, 4 weeks to me.
This could turn into a whole thing on dating with fives. They may not call you back. It may be a couple months.
My parents will call me up, leave me a message going like, just making sure you're still alive. And I have a very close relationship with my parents. It's just, you know, I don't see things in terms of like you have to do things in certain, you know, in a time. Of course, I haven't been.
Frequency does not equal intimacy.
Right, right.
No,
it's the level of connection of that, yeah.
And so say more about the time, because that's really an interesting thing that I think could be helpful for a lot of folks understanding is that the time component does not mean – when there's a space of time does not mean that there's been a loss for you of connection with that person. You're
right.
Still feeling that connection is still present.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas for other people, it would feel like – there's been a loss because we haven't been as close. It's like a heat thing, you know. I warmed up next to the fire, but I moved away, and now I'm cold. It's for you. There's not that sort of loss of momentum,
right? Right. You can pick it up. I mean, basically, right where it left off, and it's fine. And it's like that time never, you know, like that. Distance of time never existed. It's kind of like the wrinkle in time theory or whatever. You take the two pieces of string and you just kind of like put them together, and now you're next to each other. And that's the kind of thing. The time in between becomes irrelevant to the connection point. You know, the points of connection, they get tied together into the relationship. The time apart really. It's just time apart. I mean, it doesn't matter whether it's an hour or a month or, you know, 5 years or something like that. You can at least in my experience, I've been able to pick right up where those, you know, where things left off and have a great conversation and still have, you know, a similar level of trust. And it's like nothing. It's like that time in between was never there.
Just appreciating the last comment about time, and I want to go back to something that Ruth mentioned. So, again, going on 20 years of being married, when I first met my wife, again, the time piece. So when I expressed to folks that, yeah, I waited some time before, you know, Nicole and I realized, okay, we were ready to spend, you know, our lives together to get married. But there were years. Years of patience, years of sort of trying to figure out if we were ready because we were in separate places dealing with our own lives and in school and work and whatnot. So I say that to say that the time piece, yeah, it zips by. But for me, it was, oh, yeah, I mean, you just wait. There's you know, you just wait, and that's fine. To others, it might seem like a long time, or it might seem like, well, something should have been happening, but your comment about the time piece, for someone like me, it is what it is, and I don't get stuck there. But the comment Ruth made about emotions, yes, we do have them. We just don't express them. And so sometimes that's very misunderstood because, you know, we just don't put it out there. But we have them. And so as long as people can recognize that we have feelings, we're not machines, those feelings can get hurt. And my comment early on about suffering in silence, that's the conundrum, is that, you know, if our feelings get hurt, we're not just going to put it out there. So that gets misunderstood a lot. The other is the shock factor. So I love pranks. And when I crack a joke, people are like, "Well, wait a minute." They're not even laughing about that. They're shocked that I cracked a joke. And so, yes, my jokes are funny. You know, we have this debate at home. But I say that to say that people, because we're not as expressive, it does throw people off when we do something that's out of the ordinary because it's not what they would expect of us.
Agreed. It brings me back to what I was saying earlier about just when someone's like, "Oh, you're quiet only," and it's like, "No, there's so much more. We just haven't experienced it yet." Mm. I can joke around with people at work or whatever, it's, and not be afraid to go out and dance and have fun and be social. Mm.
I was talking to one that you just mentioned, dance. I was talking to one young five. He was in his mid-20s. I saw him at a party, and he was on the dance floor, and he was bouncing around more than anyone else was. And he was pulling people up on the dance floor, and everyone's like, "Wow, he's such an extroverted guy. Wow, this is amazing." And he and I were talking afterwards, and he said, "See all that?" He says, "Now I'm going to have to go recover now." He's like, that is what you look at it like it's the five is not being a five. He says, I'm still very much that. It's just I'm enjoying this experience and I'm watching, you know, and observing this experience as well. But then after that, I'm just like, okay, leave me alone. I need some space to recover. So I say that to support like this whole facet thing. Like it's fascinating. There is a whole lot more to you than meets the eye. And that's what you're saying is know me more than what you see, you know, on the surface. There's so much more to know.
That kind of story just reminded me of is a lot of people who only know us at a certain level really only ever see us when we're in a social context, when we're coming with all the energy to there. So they see us in this one way, but then we go away for 2 weeks at a time, but every time they see us, we're engaging or we're dancing out on the dance floor or something because we brought the energy along at that time. But what a lot of people don't ever see is the downtime, is what it takes for us to actually to be social. It does take a lot of downtime. And I think when people get close, they start to realize that. And I think in some ways that actually freaks people out a little bit because they're confused as to like, well, wait a minute. Like, I thought you were this like fun, like extroverted, you know, likes to party kind of guy. And like, no, you met, you know, Party Dave, you know, at when we talk about the adaptability thing, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, I can go to a party and be engaging in the party and be a lot of fun, tell jokes, all that, and people see that. But then, you know, that's not me 24/7. Like that's me on occasion in certain circumstances. Now, granted, I'll tell jokes all the time too. I mean, especially wordplay jokes, you know, if I can find something humorous, which also gets me in trouble, especially in this day and age. It's like everybody's going to hate me because they're not going to get it. It's just like a word joke. It's just really funny. But the downside is the part that I think is where we find that true relationships or the true friends are the ones who are kind of get that part and are willing to kind of deal with that or understand that I just need that downtime. They're just they're kind of like, okay, you know.
So they value the behind the scenes and not just the highlight reel.
Right. Well, they also know that what they receive from the relationship takes – like my contribution to it takes or needs a certain downtime. So if they want – to be, you know, continue the relationship, whatever they need to, or they have an understanding of like, okay, need to give time so that, or we can have a good relationship in the future.
I feel compelled just to add, and I think Rashida wanted to chime in. I've been blessed at home. Nicole allows me the time and space to recharge, and there's no substitute for that. I've made decisions around my career which, you know, are I don't work in the city where I live for that very reason, because I need time to recharge every day. And so as long as folks understand that about a five, then you can navigate. So it has implications for how we interact. So every day, every week, every month. So, you know, at home with the kids, with Nicole, I have a routine. But I'm allowed that grace, that space. So I would just say that in terms of how we're misunderstood, the challenge is that because we need time to regroup, some may view us as being antisocial. Because they see us in one frame and don't understand, well, why don't you – okay, so we worked on this project. How come you don't want to go out and have, you know, grab a beer? It's like, well, no, I now need time to recharge. Mm. And so that's all. I would just say that it's complicated, but as long as other folks are willing to understand that, then it works. Mm. But you were going to say something.
I think for the – when you mentioned the adaptability piece, it's not to say that being social and out there is not – a part of me, because it is. It's just I need the balance on the other end of a little bit of just me time.
This isn't an inauthentic.
Agreed. Yeah.
Part of you.
It's yeah. That's a piece of me that yeah. I think people are always like, "Wow, okay, wow, this piece." And what you mentioned about how having it on the downside and realizing, "Oh, wait, which one is it?" It's like it's a combination of both.
Mm.
It comes together too.
They're all aspects of you.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's not like putting on another pair of pants. It's just a piece of who I am.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really good. Yeah, as we wrap up, you have done an incredible job. Thank you so much for just the insights and helping me understand more of the five and the mindset of the five, the heart even of the five as well. It's been really insightful. So thank you to each one of you for doing this. I know this is a costly thing. I understand that because you fives, as you've talked about, you ration out your energy. I mean, you're looking at what's this going to cost me? I can do it. I'm willing to do it. There's no boo-hooing about it. It's just that understand that it is going to have some cost to me. And so I'm going to need to also have some recovery time. And so your time investment is really deeply appreciated. So thank you so much for that to each one of you. Great job again. Any final thoughts you have?
No, just laughing. What other conversations would someone use the word scientific method and goal? I'm just saying that makes my day. So you're the
part of me. So, it makes you feel all warm and fuzzy.
I'm just saying, yes, that works. So just saying thanks. It's always good to connect, but I appreciate the space. And yes, it does take time. It does take energy.
Yeah.
So as long as folks understand that about us, I think that it bodes well. So thank you for this time.
Awesome.
So thanks for listening to our panel of Type 5s. Like we said in previous episodes, we're not doing coaching in the episode with the panel that is there. We're really wanting to emphasize the acceptance and just letting them speak for themselves. But we did want to provide some coaching tips for the Type 5s on the back end of the episode. But before we get to that, we just wanted to highlight a couple of things. One of them is the website. If you're interested in being coached, either in your type, in Enneagram, in life coaching, if there's something specific that you need that we can help you with, please contact us through our website. That's www.theartofgrowth.org. And you can also sign up for our email list where you can find out about a online class we will be offering later in this year. So you can reach Joel there, his email's there, or me, you can reach me for relationship coaching with me and my wife, Abby. And we'll be doing an episode later in the season together. But for now, let's jump into some coaching tips for the Type 5. And if you can target it specifically towards relationships, and based on everything we just heard, based on the conversation we had, what sticks out to you as something that would help Type 5s move forward in their relationships?
Yeah, so that's, fives, because there's so much in their headspace, it is difficult for a couple, a married couple or a partnership, for you to immediately engage the five on that relational level that you might be expecting, particularly if you're not a head type, if you're more of a heart type and you want to know, hey, how was your day? How are you feeling about these things? you're going to be met oftentimes with a very cold, or what will feel to you as a cold response. Oftentimes that begins this whole, you know, spiraling, you know, issue between the two, where one wants to come closer, the other one starts to pull away because they're feeling invaded. So the five pulls back because a heart type might be leaning into the five, or say a body type is leaning into the five, and that can create some tension. Now, not all married couples or relation partners in business are you know, a five and a heart, you know, five and say a heart type, or a five and a body type. It might even be two head types, or it might be one who isn't as assertive. But what you're going to find is that with the head type, you cannot press in to try to figure out what's going on immediately. They need space. They need to come home, or they need to come into the office space and first orient themselves, first feel like they've got a sense of what's going on before you can just jump in. You also need to give them a heads up as to what you're going to be asking them. So they need to kind of get a sense of that. If you're going to ask them some deeper questions, questions that are going to be require decision making, give them some time. Let them know, here's what I'd like to talk to you about when we get a chance to do so.
Schedule it.
Schedule it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And then they can prepare themselves, because everything for the five is about preparing. The whole thing of surprises, of coming at them and demanding a response right away, does not work for the five. And what you're going to be met with is increasingly that shutting down kind of effect. Now, for the five, I think when the world meets you that way is to be aware that that's generally going to happen, and you're going to have to tune into what's going on with you. And so you may ask for, give me a few minutes, but then come back to that. And try to lean in, try to lean forward. I think it's important for fives to pay attention to their body, so there are techniques to do that. It's also important for them to pay attention to their heart space, and there are techniques to become more aware of what's going on in that way. But overall, the five needs to take more chances. And this is, again, challenging the sort of lie that your type tells you, which is you're not prepared. Yeah, you're not resourced enough. Mm. So you have to challenge that because it's really not true. It's fives are always going to be research people. That's one of the gifts that they bring to the world, is well thought out, well researched sort of answers, thoughts, ideas. But what they're going to have to do in order to do relationship is really come at it in a feeling unprepared, but just move forward and trust that you have enough. And that is what a lot of fives who have done this work report, is that to their surprise, things tend to work out quite well. In the end, they are prepared, and they have the sense of feeling resourced despite not having done everything that they would have liked to have done beforehand to be prepared.
It was really interesting when Claude was saying that, you know, being asked, how was your day, was such a one of his favorite questions, that it's so helpful when his wife asked him that, because he is able to then pause and reflect. But he also talked about the beginning of the relationship where, you know, they took a lot of time to evaluate. He's like, but then we decided to take this leap, and it's still this leap. And I wonder if for, like, what would you say to type fives who may feel paralyzed? Like, I want to move forward in this relationship, but that underlying lie that I don't know enough to know if I can proceed. There's so much uncertainty in relationships, because you don't know where the other person's coming from. You don't know how they're going to react to something. You don't know the long-term turnout. And you can never have every bit of information to know for certain this is how this is going to turn out. So how do you deal with that underlying lie in the context of a relationship where you want to proceed?
Every five that has lived any length of time has already had to do something like that. Mm. And when you have, it's just reflecting back, reminding yourself of the times that you actually did manage to, you know, as we've been using this term, hack your particular, you know, low side of your type. When you've done it, it's worked. And you've come, you know, away from that with some really positive benefits from having done that. So it's reminding yourself of that, that you've already done it. There are so many ways to move forward. There are steps you can take by preparing yourself physically. So tuning into your body more, because your body has also a sense of knowing, right? And so body types have this intuition that's, I just know. And once I'm in motion, it'll all start to make sense to me, right? So that's the intuition that a body type moves forward with. And fives can do that. Fives can draw from the eight that's already present within them. That's part of their, that's one of their resource points. And they can draw from that. And as they do so, there's a little less of the whole spinning in the head and the needing to be prepared. And so that's been helpful to them. Also, another thing that they can do is to tune into their heart space and become more aware. What is happening in this moment? What am I feeling? You can't do this just, you know, call up the emotions. It's just not going to work. Yeah. But when you're in a situation where you're feeling stressed, is to tune into your heart space. Because oftentimes it's there that you begin to feel emotion. And then take just a few moments to say, geez, what am I feeling right now? Because I'm having this reaction. I'm pulling back. What am I feeling? And then once you become aware, then you can start to move against that normal pattern and say, well, you know, that's not entirely true. I feel this way, but it's not true that I'm being taken over by the world, or I'm being invaded, or I'm lacking the resources. That's not actually true. What is true is I have everything I need right here and right now, you know, and I can move forward towards relationship.
Dave's talked about before how he takes time in the morning to write down, like, this is what I'm thinking about, and then this is what I'm feeling. And he's like, and my feeling category is always a lot less. I always have a lot more thoughts going on than feelings. He goes, but I still take the time every day to write those down. We've talked about to get into their body. They have to, like, put their feet on the ground and some sand and some dirt, like that, to feel that they need to put themselves in movement, or they need to, like, quiet themselves in meditation. What do you feel like is the most helpful practice for a five to delve into some of that space that they need to get into?
Yeah. I think you just said it, the physical, doing things like going to the gym, exercise, that sort of getting into your body, but not as a, not as something just to get done to check the list that you have done these things, but to really do it being conscious of what you're doing in that moment. For fives who can get – fives I talk with, it's funny. They say, oh, I can get into the flow of anything because I can completely lose myself in something that's absorbing my interest, that's pulling all of my attentional energy. I can do that. But – Which is why in relationships it can be frustrating, because they can sit at a computer and literally work for, you know, 5 hours and not interact with a single person, even at home. They can come home and they can just disappear into something, a book or something else, and be gone for several hours, and their spouse is, you know, waiting. So that's true for a lot of fives. They talk about that being one of the things that they do. And so for the five to get out of their head into something physical is to tune into their body. Like, what is my body experiencing in this moment as I do this? And it's still from the headspace, which is honoring who they are, right? They're not a body type. They're still in that headspace. But what they're doing is they're descending into the body. What is my body now feeling like in this moment? What is it experiencing? In doing that, starts to slow down the mind a little bit. And I think that's a huge benefit, because if you're aware of what you're doing, you can also do that now. You can repeat that. So you can repeat that at different points during the day, even without doing some physical exercise. You could do that just before going into a meeting at work, just before coming home, is tuning into, where's my body? Am I feeling my body right now? So, you know, just sitting down and feeling your back against the chair, feeling your feet on the floor, like you mentioned, taking your shoes off so that you can actually feel, you know, the floor with your feet. Those are things that are very helpful at grounding head types.
Yeah, I've heard from several head types that the flow that they experience of breath work and movement in yoga is very centering for them. It helps them get in touch with some of those things. There's so many different fields. The field of breath work is really expanding right now, and people are becoming more and more aware of what that can do in them as far as how they can become more regulated emotionally and mentally. And it seems like for type fives, that could be very, very helpful to look into some kind of a breathwork practice if you've never entered in that world. But if you'd like to move forward, I would definitely recommend experimenting, you know, researching it, looking into breathwork and what are the possible benefits of it for you. If you're a type five and you've never tried that, I would definitely recommend leaning into that space because that's going to help you with your relationships. It's going to help you in a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
So I would start there.
And one last thing is, I think to you fives out there is, whatever it is that you do when you start to do some body awareness or heart awareness, is it will feel very unsatisfying to your mind. And when that happens, you know you're doing the right thing. Because when you're trying to solve anything, relationship questions, issues, with more of your thinking, that does not solve the problem.
Yeah.
Is it to hack the type is to actually interrupt that normal pattern of fixating on that core center. So if you're, you know, head center, it's focusing so much more on the head to try to solve the problem that emerged from you being a head type.
Right.
So I think it's key that you'll feel unsatisfied, but what you'll notice is significant improvement. And that's really what you're shooting for.
That's good.
One more thing I want to say about a relationship with a five is, before asking them how they're doing, you can, and some fives actually respond well, as you heard, is to begin with what is interesting to them. Fives are drawn by what is interesting. That's an entry point into actually helping them to unpack who they are, unpack their day, and it honors them. So that's a good place to start, and you'll notice things will flow a whole lot better from that point.
So we appreciate all you fives out there, and for all of you who joined us because you want to better understand fives, that is a wonderful thing as well. If you want to get in contact with us, like we say, we can do that through our website, theartofgrowth.org. If you haven't left us a review on iTunes yet, it helps people find the show, and we really appreciate it. It's a real blessing to us. You can also find us on Instagram now. We have an Instagram account called Art of Growth. You'll see our logo there. You can connect with us on Facebook, and there's lots of ways. So connect with us, and we would love to be in contact and have further connection to be a part of your growth process. So thank you so much, and have a great week.